Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Irresponsible Day for the 26th of Cheshvan. Today we're going to discuss Shu'ot Tzitzit Eliezer, Zayin Yud Aleph, Volume 7, Response 11, which is from the 26th of Cheshvan of Tav Shin Chof Aleph of 1960, and it's about wearing earrings on Shabbat. But the truth is, most of our time will be spent on a previous tshuva. This is from Volume 6, Response number 6, because he writes this tshuva to a retired rabbi who had seen the previous response and wanted to write and ask him about it. So we're going to spend most of our time there because that's where he really lays out his considerations of the question of wearing a hearing aid. And this original tshuva, the volume 6-1, was written to the rabbi of Akko. And the question was, there's somebody in their community who's a Talmid Chacham and fears Hashem and, you know, is a good guy and deserves honor. And he uses a hearing aid, an electric hearing aid, in general. And the way this electric hearing aid worked, and now some of these issues will be ones that you have to ask yourself in today's hearing aids if they're the same problem. At the time, the way the hearing aid worked was that he would leave it in his ears, I think, and when he wanted to hear, he had a button on or a dial on a box that he had in his pocket. So it was sort of, the hearing aid was in the ear, but you didn't turn it on all the time. You would turn the dial when you wanted to hear, and then when you didn't want to hear, you turn it back down. I'm not sure if that was because otherwise there was feedback, but you wouldn't generally leave it on. That wasn't the way it worked at the time. And the button is on the left, and you can also stop. When you turn it off, you stop the flow of electricity from the box, from the battery, I think that might also have been the problem, was an external battery, and you didn't want to run it down because the batteries didn't have as long a life as they have now. So that was the question, can I use it on Shabbos? So in asking the question, as rabbis do when they ask questions of greater authorities, they lay out what they understand in the problem because they want to be clear that they're not a complete ignoramus. And so the person who writing to this is to the Ezer thought that there was reason to say that it's allowed even on Shabbos. So first of all, he thought there's no lighting of any kind of fire. There's no hadlaka of havara. There's no burning of anything. We'll get to that. And second, he says, there's no... another idea you might have thought was that we are generally on Shabbos not allowed to create noises or sounds. We can't use musical instruments, and you can't create sounds, so that's a second option. And here you're not doing any of that because the sounds that are being created are only in the man's ear, and therefore nobody else hears them. So the problem with creating sounds is that people would hear it, and either it would look good because it would sound like maybe they were violating Shabbos, and it would this, so that you didn't like any of that. But here, any sound that's created is only in his ear, and therefore those problems shouldn't be relevant. And then he adds that the rabbi asking the question has promised and said for Shabbos he'll turn it on Friday before Shabbos and then leave it on until Motzei Shabbos, and therefore there's no reason to think that he's been doing any malacha on Shabbos, any kind of violation of Shabbos by adjusting the battery or turning it on and off. He'll leave it on the whole time. So he wants to know, can he use it on Shabbos? So the Tzitzit Eliezer says, the truth is we need to split up this question into two parts. The first part is whether the running of the hearing aid itself on Shabbos might be a problem, right? Working the machine on Shabbos. And if you say you can't work it on Shabbos, so let's say you're going to leave it on, it's already on, can you carry it on Shabbos, right? Might be a problem. Muksa. So in terms of turning it on and off on Shabbos and running it, and that way, I mean, adjusting it or things like that on Shabbos, that says he agrees that there's no olo de kala, there's no creating of sound because it's in his ear and nobody else can hear it. But he still thinks that it's a problem, and he thinks it's a problem for several reasons. First, he says it's true there's no light. That was one of the things the man said. There's no light and there's no burning, therefore, there's no havara, there's no burning, there's nothing. He's not sure that's true. He thinks, and he's going to change in the later tshuva. So remember, we're in the first tshuva. We're going to get more information about this coming up. So don't, if you turn it off now, don't think you've walked away with this. It's Eliezer's final word, even in this tshuva from 1960 that we're really sort of seeing. He says, it's true that there's no fire, but he thinks that since the battery runs with a material inside, right? The way batteries work is there's at the time there was a liquid inside that was being used to create the differential of You know, as I'm saying this, I realize I used to know this, and I don't remember anymore. There was a liquid inside that would create a differential of electrons that would lead to the potential of the transfer of ions of electrons from one to the other, which was the flow of electrons that you wanted. So you had a liquid inside of some sort that would be allowing for that, and that's what happens when batteries run down, as they run out of that, or the charge runs out of that. So in non-rechargeable batteries, it just gets eaten up and it or consumed or used up. So at this point in his life, to the Ezra is saying, since that stuff is being used up by the process and it can't be used anymore, it can't be recharged, he thinks that that would qualify as perhaps as Havara, because maybe Havara, he's not saying maybe, he's assuming it. We're going to find out later that he's going to find out that he thinks that's not true, and he's going to accept the opinion of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that's not true. But he thinks right now that the consumption of something by an electrical process might qualify as Havara and therefore be a problem. He also says, I don't know how hot it gets inside the battery. That I think you could theoretically have established, but I think he's saying that nobody really knows it, and therefore you might have to worry about Havara. So he thinks that that turning the battery on and off is not so clearly, or running the battery itself is not so clearly allowed, not a problem of it, or the turning it on, which would then create the running of it, which would be a process of Havara, means that turning it on would be Havara. So he thinks that might be a problem, because starting any process, even if it doesn't create light, but it leads to the consumption of something, that's mavir, and then stopping it is considered mechabe. That's what he thinks. He also thinks that you have to check that when you turn the battery on for the hearing aid, you have to be sure there are no sparks inside, because as he says, he's heard about air conditioners and fans and refrigerators, that even though while they're running, there's no fire, but if, as you're starting it, there's a fire, that would be a problem of creating fire, of Havara, of Eish. Right? And that comes up, I think, in cars as well, because aside from any electricity issues, I think that in the internal combustion engine, at the moment of starting it, there are sparks. And that's a problem there, too. That's me talking, not the Tzitzit Eliezer. But in any case, that would be a problem. So you have to be sure that there's not. But even if none of that is true, he says, there's two more problems. One is, he thinks that turning on an electrical appliance on Shabbat, he thinks it's a problem of mitakein mana. Now, mitakein mana means that you're fixing something. So he says, because when you turn on the battery, when you push the button, whatever it is that turns it on, it recreates the connection between the battery and whatever it is in the hearing aid that gets it running, and that creates a closed electrical circuit that now has power to it and that has function to it, and that leads to the appliance, in this case the hearing aid, to be usable. And we think that that might be a problem. We're talking about it. You're fixing it. It was broken in the sense of, it wasn't broken, but in the sense of it was unusable, and now you're making it usable. So there are those who hold, and the Tzitzit are saying that he thinks that might be an issue, and that it qualifies as mitakein mana, that you're fixing it and you're making it now usable, and that's a problem. That could be a Torah problem. According to certain authorities, certain opinions, that is a biblical issue of violating Shabbos, of being mitakein mana. Some held it's even true of setting a watch on Shabbos, right? There are many posts who felt that fit the category. So he says, all the more so here, whether you're clearly setting it up so that it can be used, so he thinks it's a problem. And then he quotes the Chazon Ish, who I think is, we're going to see later on, that his colleague, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, had disagreed with, respectfully, but it disagreed with, that the Chazon Ish that had lakat chashmal, that lighting electricity, is a problem of bone, that creating that circuit is like creating something. So mitakein mana is different than bone. Bone is you're building something, you're creating something. Mitakein mana is just you have something already, but that the act of turning it from unusable to usable would be a problem. So that'd be another issue with the hearing aid. If you're going to follow the Chazon Ish, then it's a problem of bone. So therefore, he says, the turning on and off clearly is not allowed, which is an interesting discussion to have had, because the man writing him had said that the guy was already ready to not turn it on and off on Shabbos, but he wanted to go through it because I think the rabbi writing him wasn't clear that he understood why it should be a problem. So those are the problems that Tzitzit Eliezer, as of 1960, had with electricity, or slightly earlier, had with electricity in terms of being mitakein mana. You're turning something unusable into something usable, and maybe the Chazon Ish's problem of bone, aside from questions of Havara, if you define it as burning, when it consumes whatever it is in the battery, whatever material it is in the battery that allows for the charge to pass from one plate to create the stream of electrons, so that might be, he thinks, a problem of Havara and maybe a problem of creating sparks. So those two probably we can get rid of easily, but you're left with these last. Then, so that's in terms of turning it on. Now what about in terms of carrying it if it's on? So he says here he's going to record something he'd already written in Kaftet Menachem Av of Tavshin Tav Zion, Tet Zion, sorry, of 1956. In the summer of 1956, he had written about this to somebody else, another rabbi, and he said he's very doubtful as to whether, because apparently the rabbi writing him had said that maybe a reason to allow wearing a hearing aid on Shabbos, if it's already running, not that you can turn it on, is that you can treat it and consider, because you think of it as a muksa item, but maybe treat the deaf person, or the person who's hard of hearing, as what's called a choleshe in bo sakana. Choleshe in bo sakana, somebody who is ill, but there's no life, we have no reason to think it's life-threatening. And so the fact that it's not life-threatening means that there are lots of things we can't do for that person on Shabbos. You can't generally violate Shabbos for such a person, but there are many things we are allowed to help a person who's a choleshe in bo sakana on Shabbos. One example that I know of, that Siddur just mentioned here because it's not relevant here, is that I think in a lot of cases we're allowed to ask non-Jews to act for us in ways that we could not act, ourselves act on Shabbos, even though generally we're not allowed to do that. When it comes to a chola she'ein bo sakana, we often do allow that. And I don't want to say it any more categorically than that, because every situation should be thought of as a halachic problem and an issue and consulted with people who know about these things, but I think that's a relatively general rule. So now, maybe we'll say that since the person who's hard of hearing is a choleh she'ein bo sakana, is ill in a way that's not life-threatening, then maybe we can allow tiltul muksa, we can allow the carrying of muksa items. So still he says, I have a problem considering this person a choleh she'ein bo sakana. First of all, he says, when you have a person who doesn't feel any pain, is living his or her life as they normally do, is in every way, as far as we can be healthy, it happens to be his or her ears don't work the way other people's ears don't work. So he says, I don't know that you can qualify as a choleh she'ein bo sakana. And that's, I think, an interesting claim or a perspective that we don't always think about, right? Choleh she'ein bo sakana, we might say this as well. If somebody is having trouble that they need help with on Shabbos, we can just call them a choleh she'ein bo sakana. And certainly, as far as we understand it, a person who's hard of hearing is not functioning at 100% capacity, so we'd be tempted to say, oh, they're a choleh. So they're saying, but they're not a choleh, they're not ill in any way, they're fine, this is the way they live their lives. So why would we look at them and say, oh, that person is a choleh, that person is ill? So he therefore says he has a problem with that. He thinks to be ill, you have to be ill, which means that you have to have an ordinary state, and then that you are below that ordinary state. Or it might be that a person is unfortunately chronically ill, a choleh she'ein bo sakana chronically, but that will involve some sense of dis-ease, some sense of pain or of trouble or of suffering. And when you have a person who everything is fine in their feeling about themselves, they're just not able to hear, so that would not qualify as an illness. He's going to find a way to allow this in a minute, so don't get upset. Don't think he's being insensitive to the needs of the ill person. In some sense, he's actually being more respectful of the status of the person. He's saying, why would you qualify them as ill? They are who they are, and they're feeling fine, and they're doing well. Secondly, he says, what we allow for choleh she'ein bo sakana, when we allow things for these kinds of people who are ill without any danger to their lives, we allow certain things for them to do for them on Shabbos, he says that's when we are healing them, or hatavata michushim, or we're dealing with their symptoms. Now, he clearly means that that's not true of a person who's hard of hearing, except that I might have argued, if I was there, you might have argued that no, the allowing them to hear is in fact hatavat hamichushim, is getting rid of that which is troubling them. What is troubling them is that they can't hear, and this is helping them in that way. So you could have argued that way, but he does not. He thinks that's a problem, that would not qualify. And then, to my mind, even more important, he says when it comes, even if we were to say that he's a choleh she'ein bo sakana, that this hard person, this hard of hearing, qualifies as a person who's ill, although there's no danger to the life, there's a whole machloket about it. It's not clear that they're allowed to carry muksa items to help them out. The Magen Avraham and the Shulchan Aruch of the written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, that Tiferet Yisrael, the commentary on Mishnah, they are matirim, they allow it. But the Prima Gadim was very doubtful, and Rabbi Akiva Eger has a tshuva where he thinks it's not allowed, and the Kayadim thinks it's not allowed. So really, you have important Achronim who are split on this issue. Some think that it's okay, some think it's not okay. So you can't just assume that. So in other words, they're just saying, whatever I might have ruled for an actual choleh she'ein bo sakana, I might have said, yes, he can carry or she can carry a muksa because it'll help their illness. But granted, given that he's already concerned about whether this person qualifies at all, and that even if this person did qualify, it would have been a machloket of major achronim, so he thinks that it's a problem. He thinks that's not the way that you can find your way to permitting this person to carry this battery and the hearing and wearing the hearing aid. And therefore, he thinks he's got another way. And the other way is, I'm sorry, he just throws in a line that I think is worth noting and paying attention to. He says it's true that the whole prohibition here is Rabbanan, right? Muktzeh is a rabbinic prohibition, and very often we say you allow things, you're lenient about rabbinic prohibitions, and there are many people here who would allow it, but he says, who would allow this for people who are ill, he says, but since it's even though it's rabbinic, we should stop at what they were matir, what they allowed. What they allowed was somebody who was actually ill, and therefore we shouldn't just add to leniency. So that's a question that comes up a lot in halakha, and this instinct of the Titzel, I think we've seen before in his writings, that he is uncomfortable with expanding vehicles of leniency. When there are leniencies, he takes advantage of them. But expanding them beyond where their original context was, that he seems to me, in my minimal experience of his writings, to be leery of doing. But he does have reason to think that this should be allowed. The reason that it should be allowed is if you don't have to touch it at all, meaning not touch it, but you don't have to adjust it at all. He says, we found in Orach Chaim Shin Chet, paragraph 6, so 308-6, the Ramah writes that let's suppose that a glass was broken on Shabbos. So glass broken on Shabbos, the pieces of the glass now are really theoretically, not theoretically, really muktzeh. Why are they really muktzeh? Because they have no use. And anything which has no use on Shabbos, we're not really supposed to touch or move. We're not supposed to move. So if the glass broke on Shabbos, you would think, well, you're not allowed to move it because it's not usable on Shabbos, and we don't move things on Shabbos that are unusable. But the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah Paskin, the Ramah says, an exception would be if a glass breaks in a place where people might step on it and get injured by it, then we're allowed to move it because shelo yizoku b'hem, the people should not get damaged. So you see that where there's a worry of hezek, of damage to a person or people, it's apparently allowed to carry muktzeh items. And even though there in that same chapter of Shulchan Aruch in paragraph 18, where it talks about a thorn in Rishut HaRabim, the Shulchan Aruch stresses that the tilt that they allowed, the carrying they allowed, was because there are Rabim, there are many who might be injured by it. So you might have thought that that's true of the glass as well. It's only Hezekah de Rabim. It's only when the masses or the public might get damaged by it that we are allowed these things. So maybe for this one man, we wouldn't allow it. In other words, the avenue of leniency was going to be, and we'll get to it, that maybe if we can say that there is a worry of damage here by not letting him wear his hearing aid, then we'll allow it for the same reason as we allowed moving the glass. We allow the moving of muktzeh items to help people avoid damage. The challenge was that when it came to the thorn case stressed that that was only when it was in a public place where more than one person was at risk of being damaged. That's where we seem to have allowed it. But, says the Tzitzel, the Prima Gadim and the Mishnah Berurah have already explained that we only need Hezekah Derabim. We only need that it be the public that's a threat or multiple people who are in danger of being damaged. Well, what we're going to do with the tiltu, with the muktzeh, is carry it 4 amot in a carmelite. So a carmelite is a place that's not quite a Rishut HaRabim, not quite a public place in halacha, and you can't carry there at a drabbanan level or even less than 4 amot in a Rishut HaRabim. Because, by the way, although many people say, oh, you can carry it less than 4 amot, it's not quite allowed to carry things less than 4 amot. So for those purposes, which are more important than muktzeh issues, that is going to be a problem. So the assumption of this tshuva is that when this man wants to carry wear his hearing aid with the battery in it, he's either going to just do it in the house or he's going to do it in a place where there's an eruv. So it's not a carrying issue, it's a tiltul muktzeh issue, it's a moving muktzeh issue. But the case of the thorn was a case not just that the thorn is muktzeh or the glass is muktzeh. It's a case of, in addition to the muktzeh problem, they're going to be moving in a place where there's no eruv, there's no right to carry things. So they're going to have to violate a rabbinic prohibition of carrying things. That we only allow when it's the general public that is at risk or at threat. But if it's just a muktzeh question, so you're in a place of an eruv, you know, where you can carry, or you're not going to carry because you're going to do it just in your house, whatever that circumstance would be, if it's just a muktzeh question, so then even if a single person might be damaged by not being allowed to carry the muktzeh, to move the muktzeh, That should be okay. So how does that help us here? Because he says, with a deaf person, a person is hard of hearing, it's if we make him walk around, or her walk around without a hearing aid, it's very likely to imagine ways, it's very easy to imagine ways in which it's likely that they can get damaged as well, because they're walking around, there's something that they need to be warned against, and they can't hear people yelling at them, right? So let's say a person not thinking and crosses the street without looking. So with a regular hearing person, if people yell at them, hey, watch out, they'll jump out of the way. Or if something falls, you know, from a height, and you can say, hey, watch out, but the person who's hard of hearing won't hear any of those warnings. So that, as Eliza says, that is a danger to that person, and therefore you can say, from the example of the broken glass and the thorn, it would seem like to help them avoid the possible danger or damage that could accrue from their not being able to hear, they should be able to carry the muksa item as well. And then another way to find a similar leniency is that later on in the Shulchan Aruch, in chapter 312 in Or HaChaim, in the very first paragraph, the Shulchan Aruch rules that, so we have to harken back to a time when there wasn't toilet paper or tissue or whatever people use to clean themselves after they've used for the restroom, the facilities. So in those times, they used to use, and I don't even know how it would have worked, but they used to use, I mean, I know how it would work theoretically, but they used to use like stones and things like that to wipe themselves off with, and they would put the stones away, and you'd have stones that were full of manure, apparently, right, that people had used. So they said that, now, stones on Shabbos are generally muktzah. Stones on Shabbos have no real Shabbos use, and therefore we're not really allowed to move them on Shabbos. So they allowed, mishum kavod habiriyot, in order for people not to walk around unclean after they've, you know, used the facilities, the halacha allowed, Chazal allowed, carrying little stones that they could wipe themselves off with to get rid of all of that material that's left over after they've defecated, after they've eliminated waste. So Lavush there explains that the way they understood this was shegadol kavod abriot. We know from halacha, from other halachot, that the importance of treating people with respect, not our treating people with respect, the importance of people being able to maintain their dignity. Kavod HaBriyot is sort of like dignity. We know it from other examples in the Torah, because in the Torah tells us halacha v'italamta mehem, that could you ignore somebody who's in need of your help? So an example would be, let's suppose somebody's animal is struggling under a load, right? So you're supposed to help unpack the load and then repack the load. You're supposed to help the owner to do so. But the Gemara understood from the Torah's phrasing of italamta mehem that if somebody is old enough that it would be beneath their dignity to help out with this. And by the way, it also comes up in terms of hashavat avidah, in terms of the Torah uses the same words in terms of returning a lost item, that if somebody is old enough, I think more likely in the case of the unpacking the animal, old enough that it's really beneath them it's beneath their dignity to help out in this kind of a thing, because old people don't usually do that. So the Torah says, the understanding is, the Torah says, the old person does not have to do that. He's allowed to, but he doesn't have to do that and doesn't help with those situations. Other people are required to, and he would not be. So that idea then says, from there we get the tiltul derabanan, is pushed aside. If you have muksa issues, this is Lavush is explaining this halacha about the stones that people can take with them into the bathroom in lieu of toilet paper, so the or tissues. So the Lavush says it's because of kavod habriyot. Because of kavod habriyot, you can ignore the muksa issue. That's what Chazal were saying. According to that, says the Tzitz Eliezer, it seems to me that you can carry the muksa item of the hearing aid with its battery in your pocket, because if it's not carrying a place without nerve, I mean, just carry it around as a muksa question, you can do it, he says, because there's no greater kavod habriyot. There's no bigger issue of kavod habriyot, or there's, you know, no deep competitors to kavod habriyot than this, because, you know, if somebody's hard of hearing, they can't hear anything, it's aside from depressing prep, but it's embarrassing to them. He says you should not, and this is where you can see now he does have sensitivity to the needs of the hearing impaired. He says, what kind of embarrassment it is that people talk to you and you don't know what they've said? It's terribly embarrassing to people. There's no greater shame, he says, than coming to a place among people and you can't interact with them, you can't answer what they're asking you, and such a person, by the way, also won't be able to daven with a minyan, because what's the point? He can't hear Kriyas HaTorah, he can't hear Amen Yehi Shmei Rabbah, he can't hear Kedusha. Now, he might go anyway to be in the presence of a minyan, but he's missing out on all these things. And that, too, is a terrible shame and an upsetting situation for the person. And there are other examples along this way. Therefore, he says, says Eliezer, this person should be able to wear the earring. Now, there's much more to this tshuva, because he talks about whether or not it's true that just to fulfill the mitzvah, maybe you could have just said, well, just to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiryas HaTorah, you should have allowed him to carry a muksa item with him, or to hold a muksa item with him on Shabbos, or to move a muksa item on Shabbos. So that, he thought, wasn't so clear to Eliezer, because there are mitzvahs where we don't allow it, where we say that it's better that you don't fulfill the mitzvah rather than perhaps violate it in Durabanan, including muksa. Then there's a whole discussion about whether this item is in fact muksa. He eventually concludes that it is, but he has a discussion about it, and then he talks about whether or not you can speak to a person in such a battery. He eventually says you can, so I've skipped all that. The question would be, you know, if I know that when I'm speaking to this person, I am causing the battery to function more, because until now it's just got a regular stream of electricity, but that's, it has to interpret by sound waves to turn them back into the, to help the ear understand those sound waves. It's functioning. Maybe by speaking to him, I'm causing it to function. So I've skipped that as well, but that's another issue that comes up. So now, that's the original tshuva. Comes back to this tshuva that gave us our date of 26 Cheshvan. The person who was writing to him had seen that original tshuva, and he says, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I asked, and he mentions two important rabbanim of a generation before the Tzitzel Ezra, maybe a generation or two. So the Shabina Rav, Dov Berish Weidenfeld, I think was his name, and who has a book of Tshuvot also that's in the Bar Ilan, and who would, after the war, moved to Yerushalayim, became an important rabbi in Yerushalayim. I just looked about Wikipedia. His name is Dov Berish Weidenfeld, and his Tshuvot are called, I think, Dovei Meisharim, and he arrived in Yerushalayim in 1946 after, you know, being rescued in the Holocaust and running away and escaping. He was sent to Siberia. Sorry, he wasn't in the Holocaust part. He was in the Russian part, and the communists were trying to get rid of him for being a Talmudist, and he was sent to Siberia. And then he got to Yerushalayim in 1946, where he stayed until he passed away in 1965 at the age of 84. So when the Tzitzit is writing this tshuva, the Shabina Rav is already very aged, but is very much around the force. The Shabina Rav had responded to this man, this Rav, that you couldn't wear a hearing aid on Shabbos. You couldn't put it in because he thought that caused the electricity to function, and he thought it was a problem with electricity. This Rav, writing to the Ezra, says he had also asked the Gaon of Beis Din of Pressburg, who I'm not sure who that is, and he also had some of the reasons that we've already seen, some that we'll see in a second, but also thought that it was prohibited. So in terms of the question of electricity, so the Tzitzit says, yeah, I spoke about that, and I thought there was a big doubt about whether it's true, whether it is really mavir, because nothing actually gets burned. And then he writes, v'cha'id katavli, this is 1960, so the Tzitzit is 46, and we're going to see, he's about to quote Rosh Zalman Auerbach, who's in his early 50s, one of the great rabbis of Jerusalem, my friend, and they were friends, Rosh Zalman Auerbach, that you don't have to worry about mechabe and mavir, because he says, the fact that some chemicals get used up, right? They don't get burned up. They get used up in a certain process by running the battery, by running the thing, so by turning it on, he doesn't think that's considered mavir at all. But Rav Tzitzit says, I did say you can't turn it on and off because of other isurim that I think that he still thinks are true. And if you look there, I said, and I spoke about different kinds of batteries, different kinds of machines, because depending how they work, the technicalities are going to be different, and therefore the halachot will be different. So in any case of any of these kinds of appliances, in our case hearing aids, you'd have to make sure you know exactly how it works, and he's saying that here before you can know whether you can turn it on and off. But we're not talking about turning it on and off. And then the Gaon of Beis Din of Pressburg, still you had to borrow his sefer to find what he had written about it, but he had, the new issue that he had raised was that maybe we have to worry that the person is so used to turning it on and off during the week, right? And that could be true. So today you might more have to talk about adjusting it, what happens there, whether you can or can't. But the point is, if you're so used to it, it can become sort of automatic, and therefore he concluded his shuvah by saying, "Amach mirtava olav biracha." It's better to be stringent about it. Now, that stringency, we should remember, comes with the problems that the desert raised, of being embarrassed, not being able to socialize with people, not being able to be in shul and hear, being able to be in shul, but not be able to hear all the parts of shul that go on, of davening, of prayers that go on. So all of that is an issue that the desert already raised. But in terms of forgetting and turning it on and off. So this, to the Ezra says, I already wrote about that, and so I just skipped it before, but he said you should worry about that. But the way that you worry about that is you can tie it together in some way with a string right in your pocket that the battery is in, so that it reminds you or it forces you to think twice before you turn it off, like we do with lights. You know, if you have lights that you're worried about turning on and off, you can cover them over Shabbos. You put a cover on them to remind you not to turn them on and off. Or he says, or you can tie it together so that it can't go on, and therefore he thinks there's a way around it. So that's really, and that's the end of this tshuva. So for the 26 of Cheshvan, you see the Tzitzit Ezra finding ways for people to be able to wear hearing aids, not turning them on and off, because there are problems with that, but being able to wear hearing aids on Shabbos so that they can benefit from the life of hearing that the hearing aid wonderfully gives them during the week. They can have that on Shabbos as well, and dealing with the issues that come up, like muktza and moving and carrying muktza issues, and also like issues of the worry that you might turn it on and off. Tzitzit Ezra deals with all of them in the name of Kavod HaBriot, in the name of help and of avoiding danger and avoiding damage. That's what the Tzitzit Ezra really focused on in terms of this person who needs to use their hearing aid on Shabbat. And that is our responsible day for the 26th of Cheshvan. Have a great day.